Okay, Garth, we're plugged in and ready to go. We're ready to tumble down the rabbit hole with our guest, Sophia Smallstorm. Sophia, welcome to the Kras Files podcast.
Thank you so much, Garth and Adam.
It's very nice to have you here. We've just been having a pre-show chat, talking about all your magnificent work. So it's really good to have you on today for a chat with us. But I did hear you say on one of your shows to your guests you like them to do their own introduction. So go ahead. Tell us about yourself a little bit.
Well, you know, I just like to think. I'm one of those people that thinks all the time. And if I don't understand something, I think about it again and again and again. And then suddenly a light bulb goes off. And it's usually because something that I knew before gets connected to what I'm thinking about, right? So I tell people I'm just a curious person. A lot of people think I should have some advanced degrees because I get deep into some of these subjects and I get technical about them, but I don't really have any such degrees. And I think it's okay to be curious and to think and to put dots together and to be able to explain what you think is happening to other people.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we're
losing
that, aren't we, Garth? We always say that. Yeah. We're losing that, especially through the schools and the universities. Yeah, they're just rubbing this away. This ability to think, Sophia, it's being taken away from so many people and they're being indoctrinated into this system of you do what you're told. And if you don't, well, you're on the outside. So we definitely need more thinkers like yourself.
Well, with that, Sophia, you mentioned the light bulb comes on. You know, you think about it and think about it. I remember reading once where the author was stating that, you know, people that do that, because we're all interconnected through our consciousness, there might be somebody else over the other side of the world who has been a little bit more advanced on the problem that, say, you or I or someone else was thinking about in that particular area, and that you actually make contact because in that Red Ice interview, you mentioned that we should be doing that. We should be get rid of the cell phones, get rid of the, all the way we communicate today and do it with our mind. And that was an interesting side too.
Maybe we originally did that a long time in our ancient past, Garth. We were telepathic.
Well, the Aboriginals did it here in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think it's in all of us. It's just it's being stripped away.
Yes, well, Sophia was talking about that, so what about us getting into that?
Well, you know, a strange thing, now that you mention it, I have piles of books and papers on my bedroom floor by my bed. And I keep reading these books. I eventually get through them. Sometimes it takes a couple of years. But I was going through this stack of books a few months ago, and there was an article that was, I think, from 2005. I had taken it out of a magazine, and it was just a, you know, magazine pages stapled sitting on my bedroom floor, and I read it and I thought, wow, this is really interesting. I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know what file to put it in. I really liked it. I wanted to read it again. And I read it again a few times. And then last week I saw a film that came to town called Inside the Garbage of the World. And it was about the plastics in the ocean. And I wrote a newsletter about this, and I grabbed that article from the floor of my room where I had been sitting for years, and I incorporated it right into the newsletter. And I'm going to read you a paragraph from it. It's written by a man from Lebanon, Magdaluna, Lebanon. I was 6 when my mother asked my father to get her a garbage can. I wondered what a garbage can was. She said a garbage can was a container for things that had to be thrown away because they had no use whatsoever. That was news to me. We'd never had to throw away anything before. Paper bags, for instance, we crumpled and rolled and then used in the outhouse. Bran left from sifting the wheat flour to make the bread was given to the chickens, as were potato peels and other vegetable skins. Table scraps went to the puppy, and rotten fruit and vegetables were returned to the earth which gave them back to us the next summer in red and yellow and green. Nothing was wasted. So I could not see why Mother would need a garbage can, not at first. But it became clearer to me as the days went by. We had new things in the village, things that could not be fed to the dogs or the chickens or the earth, things that would not even burn. And those things came from the war. I'm talking now. Mm. They were tin and plastic.
Yes.
And that constituted the beginning of trash, garbage. Mm. And you know where that stuff is now? It's making its way into the ocean. Mm. The currents are carrying it around. And it's because of the way that the currents work, it's being accumulated in what everyone has heard about already as the eastern and western garbage patch in the Pacific Gyre, the North Pacific Gyre. Then there's an Atlantic Gyre. And it's also coming up on remote beaches. You'll go to a beautiful island in the middle of nowhere, and you'll see crushed steel lobster traps and huge tangles of nylon rope, all different wild colors. And these massive, you know, barrels and drums and all this plastic container stuff, you know, all different, like, to carry chemicals and gasoline, and it's mind-blowing.
Tires. Mm.
Frightening, isn't it?
Needles.
And let me just tell you, everyone has heard of the garbage patch in the Pacific Ocean, but half of the garbage is already on the ocean floor, where it is smothering marine life. And when plastic breaks down, it never breaks down entirely, but it'll break down into bits that are smaller and smaller. And then as it oxidizes and bleaches, it becomes the shape and texture and color of like dandruff. And I have seen this. I swim a lot in the ocean, and through my goggles, I would see this white stuff that looked like dandruff. And first I thought, is that like from chemtrails? Is that the chemtrail fallout? But then after I read some articles and saw some of these little films on YouTube, I realized that that's what is produced by degrading plastic. And it's the same color and shape and texture of animal plankton called zooplankton. And there's a guy called Captain Charles Moore. He took a trip to the Pacific garbage patch, the Eastern garbage patch, in 1999, okay? Mm. And he found then that the ratio of plastic in the water floating around to plankton, zooplankton, was 6 to 1. So that's 1999. 6 times more than zooplankton, the plastic. Then he went back. Yeah, it's bad. Mm. He went back in 2007, 2008, and 2009, and he averaged his readings of plastic to plankton. Now, in 1999, it had been 6 to 1, and in 2009, it was 36 to 1.
That is frightening. That is frightening. My God. What's going to happen?
So plastic way outnumbers plankton, the swirling organisms that are called zooplankton, in the ocean. And the way that animals in the ocean feed on plankton is they just open their mouths and the stuff just floats right into their mouths and they swallow it. The little fishies all eat zooplankton. And so when these animals are opening their mouths, they're getting plastic. Plastic fragments have taken the place of food in the ocean.
So that means then that anything that's done, like with us, with these chemtrails and that, is going to affect all the ocean animals.
Right. Already there's an integration of the chemicals in plastic that are making their way into the seascape. And, of course, the landscape and us, because as I was explaining to you in the pre-chat, there's something called the trophic chain. And trophic chains are in different ecosystems. They all begin with producers, which are plant life forms. Plants do not go hunting for food. They make their own food out of sunlight. And then you have all levels of consumers above the producers. And the little consumers eat the producers. They eat the plant life. And you'll have bigger and bigger consumers. Sometimes big consumers will eat plant life, you know, like herbivore animal species, or there are huge whales that are krill feeders. They eat zooplankton, which isn't a plant necessarily. But anyway, you have all different sizes and shapes of animals feeding on different levels of the food chain. But you end up with apex consumers like the white shark or the killer whale. And then when those die, they are fed on by decomposers, which are bacteria that turn organic waste into inorganic nutrients, which are then used by producers to make more food. So the trophic chain is like an upward moving, it's almost like a vortex. Because what's happening with plastic in the food chain is plastic is drawing and concentrating chemicals from seawater into itself. And as these animals are eating the plastic, they're actually getting more concentrated forms of chemicals into their bodies. And then their bodies are concentrating the chemicals. And then the consumers that eat them are getting a super concentrated chemical. And all this is moving into the material, the base material of life, because in the end, the producers will have to learn how to integrate those chemicals into the substrates for the trophic chain all over again. So we are being, as I've said in so much of the stuff I do, we're being transformed, we're being pushed, we're being chemicalized, and our biology is learning to work with it.
Could you go into a little bit what we were speaking about in the pre-chat, Sophia, about males, what's happening to them as well?
Yeah.
Because that ties up here as well.
So I would suggest that people watch a video that was prepared for Canadian television called The Disappearing Male.
I'm going to put all these links up, Sophia, when we upload this podcast. They'll be in the links with your website and stuff, so people can click on them and go and watch them.
Right, good. So The Disappearing Male was made in the 90s. It's 44 minutes. It's a great piece of work. And it's about the amazing kind of birth statistics, what's happening to male babies. Men are suffering because of this influx of plastics, which are, it's not so much the oil components of plastics, it's the resins that are added to it. Plastics either make, how do I say this? Additives make plastics hard or soft, depending on what's needed. So if you picture the plastics in your life, there's shrink wrap, which is very flexible. Then there's hard, thick plastic, which has a whole different utility, right? So it's the chemicals you add to the basic polymer that makes it either very soft or very hard or some degree in between. And it's these chemicals that are mimicking estrogen. And this Australian film called Our Chemical Lives, made in 2015, actually, which you'll upload, is very short, 30 minutes, and very clearly explains how plastics mimic estrogens in the body. They're very similarly shaped molecular chains, and they actually can plop down on cell receptors and seem like estrogen. The body in many ways is blind. It can't really tell molecules apart if they're too similar, if they have similar molecular configurations, atomic mass, electromagnetic charge. the body just thinks one thing is very possibly another thing. And so what's happening in the body is bisphenol A, which you've heard of, is shaped a lot like estrogen, and it comes into the body, and the enzymes that control how much estrogen is getting into, for instance, developing fetus, they can't spot bisphenol A because it isn't real estrogen. So bisphenol A is going in and sitting on cell receptors, which think it's estrogen, and this chemical effect is impeding the work of making the male form out of the female form. So now I'm going to go into a different area of this. All babies begin as females in the womb, even though they might have been the result of a Y chromosome bearing sperm penetrating the egg initially. For the first 6 weeks of pregnancy, babies look female. This is why when they do these ultrasounds, you have to wait till a certain point in your pregnancy because you won't see anything that looks like anything but a girl, right? Mm. So it's in the seventh week of pregnancy that the Y chromosome gets going and starts to shape and make the male form out of the originating female form. And my theory, before I watched this Australian video and got a little more educated, was that if the environment or matrix in the mother's body isn't correct, then the Y chromosome can't do its job properly. So as we know, biology has to be pretty much the right kind of field to get anything done. Otherwise, there will be errors. So if the mother is using a lot of personal products or drinking out of plastic bottles, if she has a lot of these estrogen mimickers in her system, then the control of prenatal estrogen is messed up on that fetus. So that fetus is getting, it's in a very estrogen dominant environment, even though it might be chemicals acting like estrogen, right? It's not real estrogen. So what happens is if there's too much estrogen in the environment that this baby is being made in, inside the mother's body, it's not going to come out a proper male. So the disappearing male gives us three different scenarios. Actually two, and then I added the third. The first is that there's been a very high rate of miscarriage of male babies. And I interpret that as a wholesale rejection. The body is just saying, okay, I can't do this job right. I have to get rid of it. Have to try again another time. If that doesn't happen, you get miscarriage outright. What we're seeing is this very high rate of hermaphrodite babies being born. And hermaphrodites, as you know, have characteristics of both genders. They have reproductive organs that are not necessarily female or male, a little of both or both. And so you're getting a very high incidence now of hermaphrodites in being born. Third scenario is you're getting these males that are ending up homosexuals. And my interpretation of that is this is a male that wasn't completed in the womb. It wasn't pulled fully into the male form. It doesn't have quite the male brain because it was an estrogen dominant environment in the mother's body. So the Y chromosome couldn't finish the job.
Mm. Incredible. This can explain a lot of what's happening today with the male homosexuals.
Well, we talked about
the hermaphrodites, as you said, yes.
With the movies and stuff, Garth, and this gay agenda, especially in Hollywood, this massive gay agenda that they're pushing, plus this, seems like something out there knows us very well, Sophia. And also with these plastics there, you would know a little bit more about it there. We have the BPA, but we have a lot of these baby bottles and plastic, you know, drinking water bottles the companies are bringing out now that they're glamorizing BPA-free now, Sophia, but there's other forms of it, of this in the plastics, isn't there? And I know that this, with the BPA, freaks, I know looking at my research on the this common BPA chemicals, it's in everything from drink containers and even dental fillings. And we know that it can disrupt the hormone system. And they're saying that it, when pregnant women are exposed to this, it can even get into the womb when the baby's trying to develop. And I know it can is in the these plastics and BPA are in the women's breast milk as well. But there's other forms of this plastic. I mean, they're glamorizing BPA free, but people are going out and buying the plastic, thinking, "Hey, this is completely safe now." But it's not, is it?
Well, there's the Australian video, Our Chemical Lives, will tell you there's not just bisphenol A, there's bisphenol B and C, and then there are these, you know, the plasticizers. Bisphenol A does the job of hardening, as I understand it. So there are other plasticizers. I think they all fall into this chemical class called phthalates. But there are softeners. You know, the shampoo that makes your hair all shiny has plasticizers in it. That's what's making your hair shiny. It's coated with plastic.
They have all the Pantene ads, don't they, Sophia, with the women with the plastic-looking hair, and people are confusing that with being healthy. They think it's all shiny, but it's plastic.
Right. And plastics carry aromas. So they will hold chemical analogs of scents. So it's important to add plastics to these products because that's the form upon which the chemical aromas sit and are carried. That's why. So plastics make things smell good.
Mm.
So, you know, the question is, all right, what do we do about this? We have to buy products that do not have these long, huge lists of ingredients on the back. They need to be scented with essential oils. The fewer the ingredients in what you're using, the better off you're going to be.
Mm. Yes, because you're right there, because you look at the label and it's, it's about 20 different products to make a shampoo. It freaks you out a little bit.
And all the products, Garth and Sophia, in the supermarket, it's all in plastic, you know. Going to the markets now, we have a markets sort of mix of organic sort of markets, and I just think go there once a week, get all your fresh fruit and vegetables, everything you need, and I've bought a bread machine, for example. You can make your bread at home, and I don't drink soft drinks or anything like that, and I have a very good water filter that takes out the different types of fluoride, hydrofluorosilicic acid as well, and these things. It's unbelievable. We've said, Sophia, as tax-paying citizens in Australia, and you know in the United States, we have to pay to get this stuff out of our water. You know, it's unbelievable that they're putting in. But I really think, Sophia, you know, and if you start a little garden out the back, grow your tomatoes, grow your spinach, these things, go to the markets if you have them, take your own bag, fill up, and just if you really need to get a couple of things from the supermarket, sort of get it. But I mean, I use raw coconut oil for everything. I brush my teeth with it. I use it on my skin. You can use coconut oil for everything. You can get it in glass jars. I get mine from Vanuatu. It's wild coconut oil. And you can really limit the plastics and things that you buy, but you have a look, Sophia, at most people's shopping trolleys, and it's just filled with bottles of Pepsi and Coke and the plastic loaves of bread and plastic chips, plastic, everything's wrapped in plastic. And, like McDonald's, you know, they just wrap everything in this plastic stuff, and then you open it up, you buy it, you give them money, you open it up, you stuff that down your gob, you pollute your body, and then you chuck it in the earth and pollute the earth, and you're paying to do it. We're paying to die, you know?
Let me give you a new idea. I interviewed the filmmaker of Inside the Garbage of the World, which is the documentary that I saw that you'll post, and he said, just bring your own bags and containers to the store, open up their cello-wrapped, you know, tubs of whatever it is you're buying, beans or tomatoes or cucumber, and leave the packaging at the store.
Yeah.
Put it in your own bags. Just leave it there and say, I don't want this packaging. I'm happy to bring my own containers. And he said, if enough people do this, the store will start thinking about it.
That's true, and we actually have a few co-op stores around Sofia where you just take your own jars and stuff in, and it's just bulk, and you just shovel it in and then weigh it and you pay for it and leave, and you can make your own peanut butter, and you can get this raw honey and stuff like that. You can get your spilt flour and your oats or whatever you want, and you just, they won't give you a jar. You have to pay for it if you want one of them, and they give you a glass jar, but you just take your glass stuff. That's all I generally buy and fill that up. It can be done, but I just, you know, as I said, with McDonald's and these fast food drive-thrus, you know, and these things, it's just, they've made it so convenient, haven't they? You know, for $3-4, you get a whole Happy Meal, as they call it, you know, and you get your drink and your burger and everything. It's all wrapped up for you. Just like cigarette smokers, they buy a pack of cigarettes, they take the plastic wrapping out of the top, chuck it in the ground, you know, and then they take their cigarettes out, they smoke it in their cars, they flick it out in the traffic lights onto the ground, the butts go everywhere. I mean, they're poisoning themselves and the planet with no respect, with complete discontent and disregard for anyone or anything around them. And it's all just, we've had problems here on our beaches because it's kind of completely illegal to smoke on the beaches, but people do, and those cigarette butts get in the sand and they just don't break down. I don't know what they're made of.
So I'm going to tell you another thing about sand, right? Just the way that the currents will bring different kinds of debris to the shore. And I've been walking the beach for many, many years, and I've noticed that stones and rocks that are particular size will all kind of group together. Little shells of a certain size will group together. And it all has to do with the mass of the of material and where it sits on the water. The lighter stuff is the first stuff to get deposited, and it takes bigger waves and more energy in the water to bring in the heavier stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I will read from the book Against the Tide by Cornelia Dean, just to give you an idea of what happens on a beach. When a beach is threatened by a storm, it rearranges itself to cope. Harsh storm winds quickly carry lighter sand particles on the surface of the beach to the dunes, where the beach has already established reserves of sand. The heavier particles left behind form a kind of protective covering of coarse grains too heavy for the wind to pick up. If waves do bite into the dunes, the sand they carry away collects in underwater sandbars. These are exactly what the beach needs to break the waves offshore and weaken them before they hit the beach itself. The reserve battalions of sand are turned into frontline troops. Eventually the storm passes. Now gentle swells pick up sand from the offshore bars, carry it inland, and return it to the beach. So that which floats or is light gets deposited on the beach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what this means is as that plastic degrades and it becomes smaller and smaller flakes that are oxidized and bleached by the sun, it all turns beige. And what you're going to end up with on the beaches of this world will be a cover of plastic sand, because the plastic is lighter than the real sand. So it will deposit on the top of the sediment layer. And the sand, the real sand, which is made of rock and shells, will be at the bottom of the sediment layer. So someday, we're all going to be sitting on this new kind of astroturf, which will be plastic sand, looking exactly like sand.
Same with our sky, isn't it? We think we're seeing a normal sky. It's normal clouds, but they're not normal anymore. We're living in the Truman Show.
That's it.
Artificial reality that we're being bred and conditioned to think is normal.
Mmm. That's frightening, isn't it? When you, I'd never. I know there's a lot of rubbish get swept up on the beaches, and our beaches here, Sofia, are a lot cleaner than the ones that are down in closer to the city, because evidently the main current off our beaches is about 20 miles out to sea. That's the main current that goes from north to south. And it appears that we do get a fair bit of rubbish on here, but most of it is, apart from plastic, which dirties the beach up, is the seaweed and all the plant growth. between that current and the beach. But I go down there some days and I can smell there's something strange there. It doesn't smell like seaweed or anything like that. So maybe this is what's happening. This plastic, as you said, it attracts odors.
Right.
Because I grew up as a kid on the beach, and it's a different smell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I thought that the beach would smell of the beach, but maybe I've lived here too long. I don't smell it anymore, although friends who come here, for instance, from cities or the East Coast, they tell me they can smell the ocean when they get here. But I don't smell it anymore.
Oh, it's just like if you live on a main road and on a house and there's a busy freeway or road going past your house with lots of cars all day. After a while, you don't hear them anymore.
Yeah.
But they're going past.
No, I know
past.
That. Yeah. Get used to it.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know if there is less of a smell now or I've gotten used to it.
Well, yeah. I think if you came here to Australia, you would get that smell back. because our beaches are just amazing and wild, and you really get that strong sea smell, you know? It's very, very strong. I get it all the time. You know, if I'm home all day and I go for a walk down there, it hits me really very in a strong way. So it's that beautiful sea ocean breeze. I just don't think I could live anywhere else, you know? And I don't know if I'm right, Sophia, but we do have some salt lamps, which we have a few salt lamps around. It seems to give off a real negative, positive feeling and with your smells and senses when you sleep at night to have your salt lamps on. But I figure, you know, sometimes when they spray these chemtrails so heavily around, we generally after lunch or towards the afternoon, we get strong sea breezes and it seems to sort of blow this muck back towards the city a little bit. So I feel a little bit safer. Maybe I'm wrong. But I feel a little bit better sort of living right on the edge of the coast with the sea right near me, with these strong sea breezes coming through when they're spraying these chemtrails everywhere. Maybe with the positive, positive ions, are they, or whatever, of the sea salt in the air? Maybe it cleans it up a bit. What do you think?
Those are negative ions.
Negative ions from the sea salt in the atmosphere. I don't know how they react with what they're spraying when the winds hit.
Molecules that are negatively charged are electron donors. They have an extra electron, which is what gives them the negative charge. And our bodies need electrons because electrons are what pack ATP and reconstitute it once we deplete it. So what's happening on the cellular level is you have 75 to 100 trillion cells in your body, and each one of them has a bunch of little nano machines inside. They're literally batteries. They're called ATP, adenosine triphosphate. Each cell may have up to 1 million ATP molecules in it. They're nano size. They're nano batteries. So as the cell is doing its daily business, minute by minute, second by second, it's doing detoxing, it's doing all kinds of metabolism, it's, reproducing, house cleaning. It needs energy to do this, to say nothing of the energy you need to move around and talk and do everything you want to do voluntarily. There's a huge amount of involuntary activity in the body as well, which consumes ATP. So ATP is a battery, effectively, and what the cell does all day long is it takes electrons out of ATP. So what is life? Life is the exchange of electricity on the cellular level. And so ATP is deprived of electrons. It gives electrons to the cell, and it's reduced, as they call it, into its precursors, adenosine monophosphate and diphosphate and certain other components. And then the mitochondria in the cell, which are like the little engines of the cell, they have to find more electrons to rebuild ATP. Now, your body turns over, it recycles, it uses up your body weight in ATP every day. And so these materials that are negatively charged are electron donors, and your body likes that because it's finding electrons to put into ATP. There are lots of different ways. Someday I'll do a show with you on this, on electron transfer. But that's why we feel so good when we go to the ocean, because we're getting ions from the air that have electrons to give us. And if we're barefoot, we're getting tons of electrons out of the ground. Our skin is sucking them in because the Earth's crust has a mild electron flow in it, which is caused by lightning, which is basically the energy of the sun. So we need electrons. That's how we live.
Yes.
I went a few months ago to a salt room, Sophia, where you just sit in there for a couple of hours. It was really nice. Breathing in this special salt, so it's definitely an amazing thing. And as you're right, it's true. It's nothing makes you feel better than going to the beach and having a swim in that salt water.
Right, it's very mineral rich. There's so tons mineral-rich. Of iodine in the ocean, and the interior of our cells, the cytoplasm, the water in the cell, is actually very similar to seawater. That's why some people believe we evolved from the sea.
Yeah.
So any return to that kind of environment, that feeling, is very beneficial to us. And the magnesium in the ocean, the minerals in the ocean, are very, they replenish the body. Magnesium, for instance, the number one mineral we're deficient in is iodine. And number two is magnesium. Magnesium is responsible for something like 700 biochemical exchanges.
Yep.
And so when ocean water has tons of magnesium in it, tons of iodine. So does the ocean vapor have iodine in it. This is why they used to send the convalescents to the seashore in England in the old days. You know, people went to the sea to rehabilitate.
Yeah, exactly.
So we've gotten off track.
No, it's still good. Yeah, it's still good. And right.
I'd like to hear you a little bit more on this Morgellons. And tie it up with the plastic, because we sort of we kept to the plastic a bit, and this is the Morgellons takes it further into the human body and how it's affecting us.
I'll wind back a bit, Garth, and just talk about Sophia's site, which is aboutthesky.com. And folks can go on there, and there's so much in there. I mean, you've got weather modification, geoengineering, global warming, population control, Morgellons disease syndrome, transbiology, chemtrails, everything. So people can go on there. There's some amazing pictures. And also, Sophia, you do a podcast, Small Storm Podcast as well, which is really good. So everyone will find everything they need on your site about the sky, about all of this as well. But as we said, we would like to get you on in sections to go through your research in these subjects. But if you wanted to go into Morgellons, that would be fantastic. Up to you.
Well, such a scary subject.
It's a worry, isn't it? I've spoken to people. I'll just say this before you start, Sophia. I spoke to a guy who reckoned that he had this stuff in him and he could feel it crawling under his skin. And I've also seen it myself, and I've spoken to people who said after heavy spraying in the city areas, they were driving and the sunlight was shining above them and they could see all this shiny metallic sort of dust going everywhere. I don't know what this stuff is, but I've actually have spoken to a guy who said he had these sores and he could feel it under his skin. So as you said, it's a very deep, intense discussion, Morgellons, and extremely frightening.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I should just start by saying that we're being altered, and it's not an accident that there's this stuff floating around in the air, and it's reflective and fiber-like, and it's possibly coming out of the chemtrails, but there are also organisms that are artificially engineered in our groundwater now. They're in our sewage system. People are getting the same Morgellon sores from working in the garden and digging and gardening and being in mud a lot. And it's not everyone, okay? It's certain people that are developing these lesions, and there are also other kinds of symptoms. Some people have shards of glass-type stuff coming out of their skin, silica. Other people have fibers that are different colors extruding from their skin, pores. Blue fibers, red fibers, black fibers, white fibers. And
silicon, are they? Is that what they made up of?
No. The fibers are completely unknown material.
Yeah,
nobody
yeah.
seems to. They don't burn. It's very difficult to cut them. Even
they sort of look cobwebby, don't they? Like a sort of fairy floss or cobwebby sort of thing. I've seen photos where they get on, they spray, and it comes down. People are taking photos, and they sort of morph and change, and they get on people's cars, in trees, on the ground, everywhere. And they can sort of, they look like they can sort of shapeshift almost to match the environment.
Yeah, so there are materials being introduced from the sky, presumably from chemtrails, that are falling to the earth, that are being integrated into the mechanisms of life here. And some people are reacting very noticeably. And other people may just be integrating this stuff in a more quiet way, but we're being treated to a palette of different modalities of change. We have vaccines, we have chemtrails, we have GMOs, we have, my God, the plastic, we have all kinds of stuff coming at us. You know, we've got a world that's invisible, that's radiation. People think radiation is, you know, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Fukushima, but the wireless world of radiation that we live in is as dangerous over time. It causes the same kind of tissue damage as what they call ionizing or thermal radiation, which is X-rays, nuclear radiation. So the wireless world is preparing us for some kind of integration as well. And this is based in the concept of piezoelectricity, the use of voltage upon crystalline forms that result in frequencies and vice versa. If you put frequencies onto certain crystalline forms, they will produce voltage. So
we're antennas, Sophia. Antennas.
Yes. It's not an accident that there's as much silica and crystalline development in Morgellons materials. You know, I don't know enough about it. I didn't design this stuff, but I'm sort of understanding that the vision of the transhumanists is to have nanobots swimming around in our bodies like little soldiers, organizing and reorganizing our biology and directing and controlling the direction of things, turning our genes on and off and getting between certain kinds of developments and instigating others. And these nanobots will be wirelessly controlled. So we have to be habituated to wireless energy so that we learn over the next few generations to deal with it, you could say.
Yeah, I put up a YouTube clip. It was like a military smart dust, and they were talking about it. I'll send it to you if you haven't seen it. It's really incredible. And they're calling these little computers or motes that can send and receive information and get in your body as well, which tells me if they can get in your brain, they can set up an interface. And they're saying on this that they can just spray them all over cities and they'll get everywhere. And they'll work with the technology, whether it's in cars or us or technology around us. They'll actually, they're saying that it will, these little motes will make our lives much easier. They're even saying, like, they'll get into cracks if there's a crack on the road, and it will warn your car that there's a crack there. You know, you can see where they're going with this. So it's a worry, because if they're spraying this stuff everywhere and they're so tiny and they can go onto our bodies, or we breathe them in, and they are able to send out and receive back information, like they're doing with the new smart tablets now. People are swallowing them, and the doctor can check on you on you through that. So it's a little bit of a worry. And going back to what you said before, I'll read this out. It just says, it is generally perceived that the so-called Morgellons issue is primarily, if not exclusively, a human condition. It is not. It will be found that this condition actually represents a fundamental change in the state and nature of biology as it is known on this earth. The evidence now indicates and demonstrates that there is, at the heart of the condition, a new growth form that transcends, as a minimum, the plant and animal boundaries, and that was the new biology by Clifford E. Carnicom. And I'll put that paper up along with our stuff today. So they're checking just potatoes and things like that. You were talking about, Sophia, that were growing out of the ground. And this Morgellons, whatever it is, this growth is in our vegetables and fruits as well, growing in them, not just us or people that have it.
Right. They call it cross-domain bacteria. This is the term Clifford is using. And, you know, we are from the life kingdom called eukaryotes, and then there are the bacteria and the archaea. And what's happening in us is that the archaea are much older than our life form. Eukaryotes have a cell that has a nucleus and a cytoplasm and cell walls, defined cell barriers between those two. And eukaryotes, like bacteria, are also more sensitive to chemicals and temperatures and whatnot. They're not as resilient, you could say. The archaea are very, very tough. They live in volcanic vents and the ice shelf, and you can pour bleach on them and heat them up with a Bunsen flame, and they're fine. So what Clifford has found in his culturing of tissues and materials from people with Morgellons and people who don't have Morgellons is that there are cell forms, you could say, that self-replicate in his petri dishes, and they are not eukaryotic in nature. They have properties of the archaea. He has heated them up. He has poured acid and bleach on them, and these cultures survive. They don't seem to have a problem. Another thing the archaea do is they replicate in a different way. They fragment. They'll burst and go boom, and you'll have many of them all at once. And that's not how our cells divide. Our cells divide, and one becomes two becomes four, and so forth. So archaea are also, many of them, are methane metabolizing. They're called methanogens. And we've got supposedly on the horizon this big methane bloom, right? So my pet theory is that perhaps we are being inlaid with cross-domain material so that we will no longer need to depend on oxygen the way we do now. We might be able to metabolize methane instead of oxygen, as the archaea do, because we evidently have archaea-type characteristics on this cellular level and subcellular level now.
Dear, that's going to be a big change, isn't it? dear me.
Is this the massive amounts of methane that could release from the Earth?
Well, you know, they're talking about that. And everyone is all up in arms about it. They're all excited about it. And we're not going to survive. We're not going to survive. But I'm saying, no. We may survive because already certain materials that come from another life kingdom are showing up in us and integrating with our biology. We're no longer eukaryotes solely as we're supposed to be. We now have cross-domain features on this cellular level. So we may get to the point where we will be able to metabolize methane. We will be methanogenic ourselves.
So this change is not man-made.
Well, biology adapts. And one of the things I think that's going on now is the effort to push us in different directions in order to see how we adapt to stresses. So if oxygen depletion is one of our environmental stresses, maybe we will adapt to that.
Because they've stated that the oxygen on the planet is reducing. There's no two ways about that. And not only that, we're adding to it by tearing all the forests down, etc. So that could be a problem, but I would imagine it would take quite a while to adapt.
Well, sure. But,
yes. You
know, as they say, when either the solar storm comes or the nuclear war comes planet-wide, or there are enough chemtrails, enough programs that they start causing people to die in droves, not everyone is going to die. And I think the designers of these programs are interested to see who survives. And we may be here lurching around, you know, scrabbling for garbage to eat, fighting each other. There may be very few of us left, but there are going to be some left. And those will be the toughest. Those will be the hardiest. They will be the most resilient. They will have survived the whatever Holocaust it was, or the combined Holocausts, genocides, you could call them. So those will be the prototype of the new man. It may be that, I'm just guessing, this is all I'm doing, may be that the designers of all this will flee to underground hidey holes where they have generators set up. They are in a, you know, a simulated sunlight. They have water. They have
seed banks.
Sure. Yeah. They'll be able to hang out there for a few generations. But on top of the earth will be kind of like a wild land, the aftermath of the hell. And not everyone is going to die. So the ones that persist will be the prototype of the new life form, humanoid form.
Transhumanism, yeah.
Would you think, Sophia, that this has happened before? Because there's been civilizations living underground deep. They've found these places over the years. And there's so much unknown about the human, you know, ancient history and the changes, because how he has adapted over the years. You know, we read about the Great Flood, and we read about these other catastrophes, and we also read about, you know, some authors like Michael Sarian talks about Atlanta and Lemuria. It was an atomic war. And other authors also talk about that. Is this basically what you're talking about? Is that that you're saying that's coming up, that we're in the process of it happening?
I'm just guessing. I do not go into ancient history like those authors do. That's not my specialty, but we may be entering another cycle of extinction. You know, they're really pushing the sixth extinction, as it's called, with these agendas and programs, especially combining all of them as they have. And they have building codes. Synthetic biology has building codes for lots of different things. They can genetically engineer all kinds of little species now, from algae to salmon. I mean, they can clone. They can. So, you know, they might be able to replenish the earth with a few varieties of a few things and be able to constantly produce them, because laboratory-produced life is always reliable. You know, you can make it again. So the building codes have been studied and categorized and are now being experimented with. So this extinction, I think, is something that is part of the design, so that nature will be wiped out and natural reproduction will not have a chance. So it's going to all be science.
We'll become plastic people.
Well, they're showing us in the movies, aren't they, Sophia? The Walking Dead and all these horror movies and zombie movies. I think the zombies really mean us. So they're getting us indoctrinated into something. I mean, I don't have it on me. I did put up an article a while ago, and it was a really good one, and it was saying when all these mega-rich sort of elitists, as they call themselves, start going, they're starting to fly out, and they're starting to go to these underground bases. What are we not aware of? And it was talking about NASA employees, how they have these little small plot condos under there. And they're starting to go under there, some of them. And it was talking about Russia spending billions on these underground shelters, even Norway, China, in America, these FEMA camps, increasing stockpiles and all this stuff. And if all these elitist people are starting to go under there, what do they know that we don't? I mean, I don't know if NASA knows something. They're not going to tell us because they don't want to obviously cause a general panic, but I don't know if we'll be looking at solar storms or something that will wipe out our electricity grids, worldwide, and send everyone into a panic and no water and all this stuff. But I hate to say it about the human race, but I can see if that comes, impending doom. You know, I can see murder, rape, and robbery and looting. That's what I see. You know, and mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be a good place, but it seems like these elitist people know something that we don't, and I'm wondering what it is. What are they preparing for? Because, I mean, I don't like to buy into all the Alex Jones fear-mongering and all this stuff because they sell products, but you do have to ask yourself, looking at the United States with all the FEMA camps and all this stuff going on, it just seems to me that they're preparing for a catastrophe of some kind. And obviously, I don't know what that would be. I was looking just at a story now, Earth and Environment story, and it was talking about California's 2-in-1 fault could produce a mega earthquake. It's just saying the 70-kilometer-long Haywood Fault is already known as one of the most dangerous, and it runs such a long line there, and they're saying that it could rupture together in California, and we could have a big magnitude earthquake. So, you know, these are things that can happen as well. You know, if that happened in San Francisco or California where you are and it just got absolutely flattened, it would be a catastrophic sort of thing, wouldn't it, for people and their lives. So I don't know. I can't work out what's coming at all. But it seems a bit spooky, if you would say. It seems like some people in the know are aware of something and we're not being told what it is. And as I said, NASA are not going to tell us anything at all. We don't get really anything from them. It's all chopped up into bits, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, just being alive, if it's true that we elbowed other souls out of the way to get here, this is what I've heard, we must have really wanted to come. And there are lots of built-in hazards to being here, you know. Mm. But it's also a very beautiful experience. It can be, if you stay in the moment and try not to lurch into fear, which is very easy to do.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people feeding on that, and I think you're right there. That's what I try and do, live in the moment. And, you ask people, give me an example of what time means without using numbers, and they can't. They say, oh, the sun goes around the world and the tides or whatever. It's like, come on. You know, there is no time. Time is man-made, and it's done to keep us in complete control. But when you realize there's just no past and there's no future, you just live in this moment and do the best you can and enjoy this beautiful life. But as I said, there is this kind of impending doom coming around us, and you do start to notice it, even though you do try and stay positive. But I just feel absolutely creeped out, Sophia, because we try and look after our bodies, and we try and remain healthy, and we try and do what we do. But what defense do we have when they're spraying this stuff over the top of our houses? It's so terrible what they're doing, and it's so gutless and weak, you know, to spray the population like cockroaches with mortine, is it called, that spray, you know? It's like going in the kitchen at night and spraying all the cockroaches on the floor. I feel like those cockroaches now, you know? I don't have any defense to this. I don't know what to do. I don't know what's going in my body, what I'm breathing in, and how to get it out. But I did hear you say, in regards to Morgellons, which was very interesting, that some people may have been taken and to military bases, and some children as well, since they remember when they were kids having doctors' appointments and being given vaccines, as you said, it's not everyone getting it. So I think you're right. I think it seems to be some type of planetary test. And who is going to survive this, you know?
Well, do you know anyone who's been killed by a chemtrail?
Yeah, exactly. I tell people, Sophia, I say to some friends who don't believe it, and they say, I'm fine. You know, everyone, I don't see anything. I'm fine. Nothing's wrong with me. So I can't convince them because you just, what do you do? And you watch the TV news and they have the weather on all night and they're telling people that a hazy sky's normal now. And I walk out, I'm like you. I look at your side. I know I can see these stretched sort of weird-looking clouds in the sky and I know they've been spraying all night because they're not the fluffy clouds that you grew up with. But people are going out for their morning jog and looking up and thinking that's a normal sky. And you can't convince them.
They're thinking it's beautiful. I mean, I've watched people bring... Yeah, they bring beach chairs and bottles of wine. Look at those clouds when the sun goes down.
To watch their demise slowly ticking by.
But to get on a little bit more serious side of this, Sophia, I tend to be interested in who is doing this and why are they doing it? For what reason to tamper with nature? I mean, if we're sort of forecast that there might be another catastrophe, either through that fault in California or anything else, like a worldwide catastrophe I'm talking about, it seems odd to me, or I can't quite become clear with it, as to why they would be creating all these chemicals into the human species. You know, it seems a long way around the track.
Well, we say always, haven't we, Garth, that if people talk about fluoride in the water or whatever it may be, but everyone's sort of like, oh, let's try and work to get it out, but why is it in there? I mean, it didn't just fall in there, you know? I mean, they're not just spraying for no reason. There's an intent behind this. There's a design behind it, Sophia, absolutely 100%, you know? And I don't know what it is or who's doing it, really.
Well, remember that biology depends on certain signaling at the right time. Cells communicate a tremendous amount of information across this thing called RNA. RNA is like a medium across which the cell gives information to the DNA. And cells are producing information something like 100,000 times a second. That's the rate of reaction in the cell. So when you have this influx of chemicals, it is interrupting all that signaling and all that messaging. So why are they doing this? I guess you could try to answer that by saying there is a desire to interrupt natural biological processes, biological signaling, biological design, and then to see what the biology does, which will be to try, if the biology cannot vanquish something and conquer it and get rid of it and destroy it, push it out, it'll just try to integrate it. So it becomes a dominance battle, you know, with these foreign substances. The biology says, all right, I can't get rid of this. And this may occur over generations. And the biology may say, well, let's just try to live with it, okay? Let's just mix this in with our stuff. And that's what I think is happening.
So it's irreversible.
Oh, yeah. It's irreversible at this point.
It's been done with intent, Sophia. That's what I mean.
Yes.
Something is doing this to human beings on purpose. And I think it's to do with the whole transhumanism issue. I think you're right. We're being set up as antennas. And this was done through HARP. And I think we're being changed biologically on every single level, our planet as well. And I think that this is what their plans are for sure. And I talked to you about that, didn't I? I think that as well, they're breaking down the human species through our minds and hearts, our spirits. We're obviously a spiritual people, you know, and they're breaking us down that way as well. You know, so they're taking away our empathy, and so we don't have any feelings. And I think this needs to be done in order to bring in transhumanism for sure. I don't think you can just take a spiritual race like we were and still are in a large part and just bring in this whole transhumanism, I think you need to first break those people right down to where they're just in limbo and they don't really have anything left. And then you can start to sort of wipe out, get rid of the old and bring in the new. What do you reckon?
Well, sure. Remember, you know, we always talk about how receptive and responsive people are to fear, that you can program fear and you can train them to be fearful. They're also very easily confused. I think that fear and confusion are the two main things that will unseat human thinking, being, if you want to call it that.
And it blinds you, doesn't it? Blinds you from thinking clearly. Yeah.
But I want to call attention to confusion on the biological level. It's the same thing. To confuse biology, to get in its way, to interrupt its signaling, to interrupt its processes, and then sit back and see what it tries to do. And the more foreign materials you add, the more confused the biology begins to get, and then the more it takes, its natural processes will take a back seat to, especially if you put in different technological, you know, modalities that actually are communicating themselves, right? So that's, I think, what's happening. There's a slow transferring over from natural rhythms to unnatural interference and eventually unnatural dominance. And it has to take place over, you could call it a bridge. We are the bridge right now. We are the transhuman, in the transhuman corridor.
Yes.
So we'd have to find out who it benefits, because if it's an unnatural thing like this and they're going to destroy natural life, this is going to affect the planet. You know, and as John Lamb Lash says, you know, Sophia came from the cosmos and created Earth, which is a very spiritual consciousness, you know, approach to planet Earth. All this must be destroying the Earth as well.
Something's killing the Earth, Garth.
There's something killing the Earth. Yeah, this is where I'm sort of trying to come from.
I don't think it's of this Earth. I really don't. I don't think. I think this is an absolute attack, Sophia, on all of us and this entire planet. I don't know what we're going to be used for. Why they would, you know, people just say they're just men doing this because they're greedy. You know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, well, that's why it doesn't add up.
It doesn't add up. You know, I can understand men can be psychotic and psychopathic and crazy and want money and do anything to get it. But this, the viciousness and the heartlessness behind this and this program, Sophia, it just doesn't seem human to me at all. And I know we're going off topic here, but it's crazy stuff. Yeah,
I think this is an important part of it.
It's a beautiful, beautiful Earth we live on. I mean, we have absolutely everything that we could ever possibly want here, and something is just poisoning us off. It's unbelievable to see. You know, it's just, I don't know what to say about it, Sophia. I really don't. Really don't.
Well, you're doing. I mean, if we, like I said, if we battled other souls to get here, then we really wanted to be here.
You think we're on a mission, maybe?
Yeah. Mm. So that's what you're doing.
We're battling to save the planet, Sophia, on our mission. And then, maybe there is an afterlife and we go back and we choose to come to another mission. What do you reckon? Do you believe in that sort of stuff, that we are here doing fighting the good fight?
Well, we're here to express something, you know. That's what we do all the time. And you could call it fighting if you want to call it fighting. You are, as I can see it, frantically almost expressing. That's what you're constantly doing. You're informing, you're communicating, you're creating energy through your perception and from your perception all the time.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I never did well in school, in high school. I got kicked out. I don't do well in jobs. I lose jobs. I'm a dreamer. I'm walking around. But this sort of stuff, I feel like I'm constantly getting downloaded with information and I can't stop letting it out, you know? I just it so interesting. It's like I do feel, Sophia, like, you know, you live your, some people live their entire lives and they do that one job, and they get to the point where they're going to die and pass over, and they sort of regret things that they didn't do, or they may feel like there's something in this life that they didn't get done, or there was a purpose here for them to take hold of and they didn't grab it. And I feel like this is it. What we're doing now, it's just, it's, I think this is what we're here to do, to talk about what's going on and how we perceive things, and give out our ideas. I think that's what we're here to do, to learn, to just suck up like a sponge and learn as much as we can while we're in this life. Because, you know, I don't believe in death. I think our body stops working and we pass on to an afterlife that's just as real as this. And I think we can reincarnate, come back, or go on. But I think I wouldn't want to waste my life just doing one miserable job, Sophia, and that's it, and dying. I think this is so interesting to do. If I didn't start this, I wouldn't be talking to you right now, and Garth. I wouldn't be talking to any of these guests or doing what I'm doing. What I've done is I really believe in life just being an infinite number of freeways, and I think you don't just have to take that one freeway your entire life. And here I was going along, and here you were going along, and then bang, and now you're here, and I'm here, and Garth's there. So it's really fascinating to look at, you know. So we'll just keep going, you know, and keep researching, and keep going through your incredible work, you know, which we didn't even scratch the surface of today. It's impossible. Oh, my God, there's so much. Yeah, we can get there, eh? We can just keep going and pushing through. But, you know, I really like your research, and, you know, I didn't want to bamboozle people today, but I loved your work on viruses and this stuff, because I was talking to people about it and they agreed as well. You were saying on the podcast I heard last night that you went for a big run one day and you may have pushed your body too far and then you came down with the flu.
In the ninth mile, I went for a 10-mile run. That's amazing. I was fine. I was having a great time, and, I had 1 mile to go, and I caught a cold. I could feel it. I suddenly couldn't swallow. I had that nasty, peppery feeling in the back of my throat. Yeah. And I came home, and I showered, and I got sicker and sicker by the minute. And I ran out of gas. My bioterrain changed.
And so they're telling us that these viruses are all around them, but you're saying that they haven't been isolated, that you haven't isolated one, but the vaccine companies are using this to scare us into getting the jabs. when I think it really is up to our immune system. When our immune systems are down, we don't get well. And it's a sign that our bodies aren't well and we have to rest. But so it's a deep, deep thing, because people are, as I said at the start of the podcast, you know, or when we talked, kids get their hands dirty now. Parents panic and wash them, and they think there's diseases and viruses everywhere. People think if your kid's not vaccinated and they go to school, it's going to make their vaccinated kids sick, and all this stuff. But the work that you're doing on viruses, it really is, well, what I've heard you say about it really makes sense. I'm really enjoying hearing this, because it's a different level altogether, you know.
Well, I'm just learning it, really.
Yeah, that's what you said, but it's very interesting. You know, it's still interesting to people who don't know anything about it, you know. You know.
Yeah, it's a different take, that's for sure, and it really takes apart the convention. And that's what I like about learning this stuff, because the convention does really not make any sense. And when you can come up with stuff that makes sense, and you can see how the convention is really artificial, and you can then see the agenda behind the convention, that to me is, that's what it's all about.
Well, it's I agree there totally, because, you know, they're taking away our ability to think, and also to be creative in our thinking. It's not just a matter of thinking, it's a matter of being creative and having some foresight and being able to look ahead with your thinking, because so many people just accept that. And even through the universities, you know, I've had discussions with people that are far more educated than I am, and particularly about things that have happened in the world, and they are so negative. They, you know, things that I would think are fairly much common sense they disagree with. One of them is 9/11, but we won't go into that today. But I've had discussions with people that it's rather frightening that highly educated people still think aeroplanes brought the buildings down. I'm just using that for an example. And particularly it goes on with HIV and with vaccines as well. You talk to well-educated people and they seem to be on a – they can't seem to get out of that groove that they're being told vaccines are good for you and that's it.
Oh, it's because Rupert Murdoch –
So it's people owns. Like you, Sophia, that it's important that you are thinking as an individual with that creative thought. And I think this is where we've got to go, really.
Murdoch owns the media here, Gar, 70% of it. And yeah, so well, that's what people sit down to every night. They sit down to the news, and it's so glossy, and it looks so amazing, and that's just what they're spoon-fed their entire lives.
But, yeah, that's right. But, I mean, it's like trying to do everything, anything against these people. It's just like, don't buy the Telegraph.
But we've talked about this before. Garth, that these people that are attacking us for trying to get vaccination information out, they are protecting the very system that hates their guts, that hates them with venom. So the human being, Sophia, is amazing to me that they have got to a position in this life where they are protecting, the enemy and attacking us who are trying to give out information.
They can't think.
No.
They're not thinking creatively where they can look at the picture, the whole picture, and then make a clear-eyed, if you like, decision. I mean, Sophia was just saying she looks at something and she studies it and works it out in her mind, and it could be days later before something shows up. Suddenly there's a flash of lightning and there's a new idea has come in. But these people don't do this anymore. We don't have creative thinkers. Even our intellectuals aren't creative. Have a look at them in this country and the crap they write. And they're supposed to be our intellectuals. Well, you know, I would tend to say something like, without intellectuals, free-thinking, creative intellectuals, we're failing. And it's people like you, Sophia, that have got this ability to be able to get off the standard wagon, get off and look for something else, because there is something else there to look for. And so many people don't want to find it. They're not interested. Doesn't matter how much education they've got, you know, which to me is a waste of a good mind.
Well, right.
I find it difficult to understand that because, you know, I'm only an average guy and I'm always looking for the creative side of things, trying to find out what's happening here. I'm not going to accept that. Okay. Intellectuals are very important. We've got to have them, but for some reason they seem to have changed them. We don't get these great writers. We do get them over the world, but, you know, there's just not enough. There's not enough to make an impact.
You know, you have to, I think, ask yourself, what has happened to the life force in people? And when you look at these intellectuals, if you ever happen to sit down with one of them and you have a conversation, and you look at how they look at you, that what's in their eyes, and you realize that you have something very different operating in you than they do. And there's become an us and them division. And the perpetrators of all these programs are successful because they have managed to kidnap a huge number of souls and minds and snuff them out.
Yes. So they do that. I understand through the universities as well and through the school, because this Common Core schooling that's coming up is a definite promotion of that, of controlling the minds of the brighter children.
Well, they do that really, Garth, through the willingness of the person. You've got to be willing to have your mind stolen.
Do they know that they are willing? Or are they being deeply sort of massaged, if you will, or subconsciously to sort of go that way and sort of makes them an easy target, I guess, you know, through the general culture on offer?
Well, you said of yourself, Adam, that you didn't do well in school, you were kicked out.
It just felt unnatural, Sophia. It just felt so unnatural, like I was a fish out of water. That's why. And then the teachers picked on me. And, you know, that's what they do to these types of people. it didn't mean that I was dumb. I was just like, I was more creative, but they pick on you and push you out, you know?
Right, but you could have succumbed to their picking on you and you didn't. And so that's where the volition...
No, I threw garbage bins at them. Yeah, I lashed out, yeah, actually.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you a quick story on that, Sophia. The headmaster at Adam's last school rang me, and I knew him personally. And he said, Garth, please take Adam away from me? He said, would you please take Adam away from me? And I thought, I said, Barry, what's happened? What happened? And he said, well, he was playing up in class and disrupting everybody. So I called him up to the office, and I turned around to get his file out of my filing system, and when I turned back, he was gone.
I'm still doing the same thing now.
And he's still doing the same thing today.
Yes, and look where I am. You know, I didn't go to university, but I feel like I'm on the right track.
Yes.
It feels right, Sophia, that's what I mean. Feels right. It feels comfortable talking to you and doing this, learning this information. As I said to you before, I don't know if you put me in a maths class or something in school, I don't think I would go in, but hearing you talk and researching your papers and doing this, I just can't get enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I know Garth's the same and you're the same, so it just makes us sort of similar individuals in that way, but that's just how I am. I just love this sort of stuff. And some people do think it's negative. I can understand that, because most people who are got their head in the sand like an ostrich and they just go to work and watch the sports and they just want to live that life. And I understand. I'm not picking on anyone. People have a family and they just get so busy in their lives and you just try and talk to them about fluoride or something like that. They just don't want to know. The shutters come down, don't they, Garth? The shutters come down on the eyelid. The eyes just close over and they just go all hazy. And I can't blame them, but, you know, this stuff makes me so excited. Maybe I'm sick.
Well, because... Am I? You're following a natural learning course, and it's being prompted by serendipity, not by a textbook.
Isn't
you know,
that strange?
You don't know. Yeah, you don't know what the next chapter will be. I don't either. You know, tomorrow I wake up and there's stuff in my inbox, and I'll click on something, and then I'll read a part of it and think about it, and I'll go over to something that I've already got. You know, and that's how you start threading. You make your own tapestry. And that's really what this existence is about. It's about weaving meaning that's our own, not something that's being offered to us for a certain tuition every year and then a degree afterwards, you know. Mm. And that's why you're so good at this, Adam, because this is yours. You're doing it.
Yeah, well, it was just, that's why I did it. I mean, you know, I didn't care. I just said, Garth, you want to do this? And when we started, and it's been heard in 60 countries. So it shows, and we're talking to you. So, you know, it just shows what you can do. But I feel like I'm not even really trying. It's just I don't have the money to take it any further. I mean, it's very expensive to do this in a way, you know. It's going to cost me another $400 just to get 5 gig of space to upload the podcast. And so some people have the money to do big websites and everything, but I just don't. And so it's hard to do what you really want to do, you know, but I just do what I can do, you know, and I think that's all you can do, right?
Well, I personally think it's such a, you know, it rolls on naturally without being pre-programmed, and I think that's what people seem to like, you know, and I think... Leaving it as it is, I would tend to say leave it as it is. You know?
Well, that's why I just wanted to get Sophia on.
You don't need money to do it any
better.
Yeah,
yeah. We just usually just chat, Sophia, and that's what we've done today. And it always comes out well, and people enjoy that. Because I've heard a lot of guests we spoke to, they get them on and they just go through these mechanic questions, and then that's it. And then so, I like to just get on and talk because there's so much to talk about, particularly with your work. You know, I don't think we can get to the end of it.
No, because I'll have a new chapter tomorrow. Anyway, so yeah, let's pick it up again. And it was nice to get to know you. And I enjoyed this session very much. And maybe people got something out of it.
I hope so. And as I said, I'd like to, I'll just let you know. And when you have spare time, we can do more. and maybe go a little bit into your virus study as well, and what your opinions are on vaccines. As I said, just I'd like to get your pick your brain a little bit on that. You know, what you've studied in your life on vaccines, not other people, just what you think on it. It would be really great to get your opinion to help us here, so I can put it up on our pages and people can read a different angle on this, you know what I mean? You didn't get to go into it much today, but it would be good to do another show very soon and go through that with you if you would like to.
Yes, particularly of course.
I was just going to say on the fluorine you brought up on 9/11, the fluorine, which I found fascinating, and very few. I haven't heard of anybody prior to you talking
Nothing.
About that.
No.
I read the fluoride deception, and I started seeing what was happening to people in the Manhattan Project. They were losing all their teeth, and the shredded skin coming off their bodies. Anytime there were these huge fluoride explosions at these plants. You know, fluoride would combine with uranium. You'd get uranium hexafluoride and different oxygen fluoride explosions. Awful. Fluoride is the most volatile element in the periodic table. And it is called the bully of the periodic table. So we can do a show on fluoride as well. But it was used and is still used in weapons making. It's used to enrich uranium and extract metal ores. Mm. We can extract metal at room temperature. So I then said back in, I think it was like 2008 or 9, I'm wondering if fluoride was a component of the destruction of the Twin Towers. And apparently deuterium fluoride is an ingredient of the atomic hydrogen bomb. And these mini nukes that may have been planted in the towers released deuterium fluoride, and that's what vaporized the steel. But this is the Don Fox is looking into this. I interviewed him on my show, and he will do an interview with you, I'm sure. But I was just happy to see that after all these years, you know, this concept of fluoride destruction might actually fit in. And it was just a gut feeling I had. But I'll read some of my notes from the Fluoride Deception, Christopher Bryson's book, if we do another show. But there are many, many things to talk about. And, you know, I'm just somebody who thinks, and I store things in my head, and it pops up again, and I say, you know what, that has an awful lot to do with this. And then I try to see, does it? Does it really? And eventually, the way the universe hands you these new assignments, connections, calling cards.
Yes.
That become, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. And once suddenly, you become aware of it gets more intense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and suddenly all this new stuff starts showing up, and then you get very excited, and now another piece of the puzzle starts to fill in. So that's what I like about doing this kind of work, because I feel gratified that I'm able to learn so much, and the picture, even though it gets bigger all the time, it makes more and more sense. Mm. And it forces me to sharpen my wits, because I have to hold a massive amount of information in my head with each year that arrives. You know, I don't know how to file all this stuff. I mean, I can...
Yeah, neither do I.
I can look in my computer, but it's going to take me a long time to find something that my memory can just, you know, chug up in a millisecond.
Yes, I know. I've asked people that are, you know, work in offices and that, how I can improve my filing here, because there is so much info.
Gus, like a mad scientist, Sophia, up there with his glasses yeah. all foggy and his papers going everywhere and files all over the floor. And it's an absolute classic.
It's great. That's how I am. I have papers. I have cartons of papers. I'm afraid to throw them out. And okay, but I have it in the computer. I shouldn't worry about it. I don't know if I'll ever find it in the computer.
Well, a friend of mine walked into my little study and said, "My God, what a mess." There's stuff hanging everywhere. Anyway, not to worry.
It's the way it is. Well, yeah, it keeps you organized. And I'm like that, Sophia. Sometimes I get up in the middle of the night because something hit me. I write it down, you know, and, you know, keep making notes. I'm very sporadic, but as you said, yeah, it just keeps coming. And there seems to be some connection to us, a force or ourselves, our higher dimensional selves or guardian angels, whatever you want to call it. There just seems to be constantly putting this information through to you, showing you the right way. And you just have to be aware of it, you know, and don't be scared to take that step and keep moving on and going ahead with your research. So it's great to do, you know, indeed.
Yeah, I would say going ahead with your discoveries. I don't even want to call what I do research because I don't even know what that is.
I guess you're discovering. Yeah, it's a better way to put it, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and discoveries are exciting. Research sounds really boring, you know.
Yeah, it does. another part of your work too is the eye of the needle, which we should, on a later one we'll get into because I found that interesting. Into a new dimension, you know, which could be the, well, the salvation of people on this earth, how we're going now in relation to all the stuff we've just talked about. Are we capable of getting into that next dimension ourselves without being sort of transhumanized?
Well, it's a higher dimensional frequency, isn't it, Garth? And I think that it seems that we're being kept in a lower frequency, sort of a dimensional state of fear. And I think, as Sophia said before, all the wars and the world wars, and they're constantly pumping this fear out. And if we're living in a negative state of fear, we're going to be kept in this low level, aren't we? Frequency state, and we aren't going to be able to transcend, which they say we are doing. We're transcending. I don't think anyone can stop that. And I think we're just part of that. We're connecting with that and we're going higher. But they're definitely desperate, or something's desperate, Sophia, to keep us bogged down in this fear state, you know. They keep pumping it out. You really, when you become aware of it, it starts to become ridiculous. It's a sad thing. But I think many, many more people are starting to connect now and making, moving forward. I think it's a positive thing, and I'm happy about it.
Well, yeah. And on that note, maybe we should...
Chuck it in and let Garth go back to his laboratory. And we'll finish up for the day.
Back to his painting brush.
Yes.
Back to our mad science.
Yeah. Anyway, it's
all right. So,
great talking to you, Sophie. Sophia, for sure. Yes, we must do it a number of times. There's a lot of stuff I want to get into that you're doing. So
I will do
interesting
that,
times.
And your website, Sophia, is aboutthesky.com.
Yes, and my store is Avatar Products.
There's some great products on there and that people can purchase if they have a look too, and well worth it. And, of course, you can donate on About the Sky to help you keep going through PayPal, and you can go through all these incredible papers, and there's plenty on there to keep people busy for a long time. So are you going to do do you do many podcasts? You don't do a weekly one, do you? You just do them every now and then. Yeah.
I do about two a month. But I also have a newsletter tab on About the Sky, and I'm posting – I've been doing a private newsletter for, gosh, I think it's now my fifth or sixth year. And I've been putting up issues. So if you like what you see up there on the newsletter tab and you want to get it, you can just email me and I can let you know how to get the newsletter. But otherwise, I'll be doing the podcast on a regular basis and uploading newsletters every once in a while. So the newsletters go by snail mail.
Okay.
Which is what people seem to like the best.
Okay, cool.
So that's why I do it like that. And they're by subscription. So, yes, okay. But I am very happy to have been able to participate tonight. It's night for me. And I'll be back if you want me to.
Of course. You connect very well with what we're doing. We're almost of the same mind here, so it's so good to speak with you. And we're going to get you back very soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Garth and Adam as well.
Yeah. Okay. Can you just stay there for one sec, Sophia? 1 second?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for listening, folks.